Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. An estimated 40% of car trips are for distances less than 2 miles. But what can we do to make everyone feel safe enough to ride a bike or walk instead of using their cars? My guest today will be talking about bicycle safety, education, advocacy, planning, and Bike Month activities. I'm joined by Dan Rivoire, Executive Director for San Luis Obispo County Bicycle Coalition, Peggy Mandeville, Principal Transportation Planner with the City of San Luis Obispo, and Stephanie Hicks, Program Manager with San Luis Obispo, Regional Rideshare and Public Information Officer with SLOCOG. As always, you are part of our show, and you can bring your voice to our conversation by calling 781-3875. We'd love to hear your observations, questions, and also receive your comments. That's 781-3875, and welcome to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
So first off, all three of you kind of approach bicycle awareness, safety, education, but you're doing it from three different organizations. So kind of give me a brief overview of what your organizations are and kind of what you bring to that particular model. I'll start with you, Peggy.
Thank you. The City of San Luis Obispo actually builds the bike paths that the other partners here today are helping get everybody on. So we build the bike paths, the bike lanes. We also do bike education and bicycle promotion.
Okay. Dan.
The Slo County Bicycle Coalition exists to improve the quality of life throughout the Central Coast through bicycling advocacy, education, and inspiration. And so our goal is to work with Peggy and her allies and the decision makers in the community to convince them that bike paths and bike lanes and safe streets are a good idea and something that our community should invest in. We also work with people in the community to educate them how to ride on the existing roads, on the existing streets, and how to feel safe and confident enough to choose a bike for everyday transportation.
Okay.
So,
and Stephanie.
Hello. SLO Regional Rideshare is a division of the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. And so we kind of work with these guys sitting here on a couple different levels. The San Luis Obispo Council of Governments is the metropolitan planning organization for our region and the regional transportation planning agency. So we work as a funding partner on a lot of those bike paths that Peggy builds. We funnel state and federal funds down to our jurisdictional partners, which are all the seven cities and the county in our region, mm-hmm. and we work with them on projects like multi-use paths, trails, bike lane improvements, all different kinds of things, freeway improvements, the Los Osos Valley Road interchange improvement that San Luis Obispo is about to start. We were a funding partner on that. So we're involved from the planning and funding side of things at SLOCOG. And then SLO Regional Rideshare is a division within SLOCOG. And our goal is really to promote sustainable transportations in multiple modes. So we promote bikes as one mode, and we try to get people to ride bikes. We do a lot of work in May, since May is Bike Month. But then we also promote the concept of carpooling and vanpooling, walking. There's lots of different ways to think about your commute. So biking is definitely something that we pay extra attention to in May to celebrate Bike Month.
Well, where does San Luis Obispo County fit within the spectrum of things in terms of its place as a bicycle, kind of a bicycle-friendly community?
I think that San Luis Obispo County has a lot of things going for it. We have wonderful weather here, mm-hmm. And so the weather definitely encourages us all to get outside a little bit more than probably other parts of the country. We have cities and regional government that's very committed to building the facilities needed to be able to use sustainable forms of transportation. And so we have emphasis on good facilities. And then we just have an active kind of mindset here in California where we want to get outside and enjoy the outdoors. And so we are very fortunate that we live in a place that has all of those things working for us. And so we don't have a lot working against us. We just have to kind of start thinking that way and get out there and do it.
So are we a community that is using bicycle as an alternative method of transportation more than other communities, or do we have a long way to go?
We are a little bit above the average. At the national level, about 2% of trips are made by biking and walking, commute trips on an everyday basis. And in San Luis Obispo County, on the countywide level, that rate is a little bit closer to 4%, a little over 3%. And so we are seeing that our community is ahead of the curve, and we've done a good job building facilities that make people feel safe enough, and our community members are choosing biking and walking because of that. But are that doesn't mean we don't have a long way to go and more safe facilities and more people to educate as well.
And those facilities include things like putting bike racks on buses. So if you do live in Paso Robles yet work in the city of San Luis Obispo, you can ride your bike to the bus stop, put your bike on the bus, and then ride down into San Luis Obispo.
Okay. And I do want to go on record to say that Peggy rode her bicycle here, and she got here first.
So and they may have ridden too, but I got here first. So
I'm just saying.
Well, and the other thing is that I am not a spring chicken, and I can put my bike on a bike rack on a bus and get on a bus and ride, and I'm on video doing it. So it's not that hard.
What are some of the challenges that you face with trying to encourage more people to use bicycles as an alternative form of transportation?
Dan, wouldn't you say it's perception?
Yeah, I think that's one of the key things. People really think that bike riding is extremely risky. People are afraid of riding their bikes. A recent countywide bicycle barrier survey that was supported by SLOCOG and some other allies in the community studied commute traits and commute behaviors and opinions of local people as to why they aren't riding more often. Mm-hmm. And some of the number one reasons we heard were unsafe and speeding vehicles and gaps in the bikeway network as major barriers. Yet, accidents happening in our region for biking and walking, don't even compare to what happens with people who are driving, the rate of accidents. And so we're excited to emphasize the benefits of riding a bike, remind people that you can be safe on a ride. You can be safe using the roads as your bike paths. And if we can help people understand how to ride safely, we really believe that we can remove that perception of fear and help people feel comfortable.
Now, I read an article, and I was racking my brains before I came here trying to remember where I saw this, and I know it was in a local publication, but it was cited that San Luis Obispo County actually has a high percentage of deaths that are related to bicycle accidents, higher than average.
It is true that I forget the exact ranking, but out of counties in California, we do rank close to the top for injuries and fatalities compared to counties of our size.
Okay.
And one of the main reasons why that's the case is, well, it's true, some accidents are happening, but also we have a much higher rate of people who are biking and walking. And so that pushes that number a little bit further to put us in a ranking situation that makes it look like things are dangerous here, although more people are riding.
So we were at the top of that scale, but compared to what other counties?
I have to, sort of rack my brain, and I'm not completely
positive.
Were
they compared to counties that are similar size to us or just other counties?
I believe the county comparison was to those that are similar size as us, and our commute rate was a little bit higher than most of those. Mm-hmm. And in the ranking, I think we were, in the top 10 or something like that. And then you have some other communities that, had no fatalities or anything, but their percentage of people biking and walking was close to zero.
Right.
And while we don't want to see any collisions at all, I think this community is very proactive and investigating all collisions and considering what can be done and actually going out there and making engineering changes to the roadway if that is warranted in order to reduce the potential of a future collision.
And, we have in this day and age, one of the things that we have is we have texting with driving. You've got distracted drivers. And unfortunately, all of those things come into play.
And then unfortunately with, I believe, two of the collisions that ended in fatalities in the city, alcohol on the bicyclist part had a big part or big reason behind the collision.
Yeah. Okay.
So for your average person, you know, just like driving a car, you shouldn't be getting on your bike when you've had alcohol
right.
and ride. So right. that takes care of that problem.
Yeah. Would all of you feel safe riding your bikes on any road here in the county?
Any road?
Yeah. yeah.
You know what? That's a good question. I'm not quite as an experienced cyclist as my two fellow partners here. So I would say not any road, but I definitely feel as if I can get around the city of San Luis Obispo in a safe manner on
okay.
my bike.
Okay. And the city of San Luis Obispo has a different infrastructure, correct, for bicycling, which is
right.
what you're
so, and
talking
it's, you know,
about.
The, yeah, across the city of San Luis Obispo, it's a couple miles, so it doesn't take much to get from point A to point B.
Right.
But to tag on to what Stephanie said, we also have bicycle education classes that can help people feel comfortable. Now, that doesn't mean you need to ride from Atascadero down to Rio Grande, but in your community, you could even make those shorter trips. So instead of going to your neighborhood grocery store in your car all by yourself, you know, as many times during the week as you go, why not take one of those trips and get on your bike, take the back roads, get a little exercise, and take one more car off the road.
And, yeah. and just to add on to that, we are, as Peggy mentioned, we're very proactive in trying to figure out how to make the facilities better. So a good example is the Chorro Valley Trail that we're working on right now, that Slocog's working on with the city of San Luis Obispo and the city of Morro Bay, and trying to create a separated multi-use path or trail between San Luis Obispo and Morro Bay. The Highway 1 is there, and you definitely can ride your bike on Highway 1. There's very wide shoulders to ride your bike on Highway 1, but that doesn't mean everyone's comfortable riding their bike on Highway 1.
Sure.
And so this is the perfect example of government listening to what the citizens want and trying to investigate ways to make it them feel comfortable being able to ride their bike between San Luis and Morro Bay. There's a lot of kids who want to be able to ride their bike to Cuesta, and so this path would solve that problem.
The path that you're working on now?
Yes, it's called the Chorro Valley Trail.
Okay.
Yeah, you really asked the perfect question is, do you feel comfortable, us in the room or anybody who's listening, do you feel comfortable riding your bike on any street?
Right.
And for most people, the answer is no. I don't feel comfortable on riding on most streets with traffic. I feel comfortable riding on a bike path.
Yeah.
And in our community, that same study that I pointed out earlier, determining what the barriers are, about 50% of the people said they're interested in riding more often, but don't feel comfortable on the existing roads. And so our goal, each one of the partners in the room right here, is to work with our governments, work with our educational entities, work with rideshare, et cetera, to help people feel comfortable, to build safer routes, and to hopefully get more of those interested folks, 50% of the population, choosing a bike more often.
Well, and I think also educating about how to ride a bike and also how to drive when there are bicyclists on the road. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio, 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 89.5 Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at kcbx.org, part of the NPR digital network. Almost every American has ridden a bike at some point in their lives, yet as adults, we tend to lead toward driving our cars, even for very short trips, as Dan has mentioned. My guest today is Dan Rivoire, Executive Director for Slo County Bicycle Coalition, Peggy Mandeville, Principal Transportation Planner with the City of San Luis Obispo, and Stephanie Hicks, Program Manager with Slo Regional Rideshare and Public Information Officer with Slocog. Central Coast Voices is a participatory show, and we invite your questions, observations, and comments. And we have a comment from Billy online. Here we go. Billy. Billy, are you there? Billy?
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay. I had to turn up my speaker, and I way turned it up. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Did you have a question or a comment?
Well, I was calling in. Hi, Dan. Hi, Peggy. I was just listening and talk about the crash statistics and the injury statistics, and I wanted to clarify that, you know, we do live in a community that's actually, for its size, has a lot of amenities, and we've made some pretty aggressive steps with the new bike ed plan, and I wanted to kind of confirm that Dan's read on kind of we stand out in that kind of that cohort is right on, and that kind of I do think that we're a little bit of an anomaly, because in the population, I think the range was a 25 to 50K city range that they were looking at, and there were something like 100 cities in that cohort. And there aren't very many college towns with lots of cyclists in that cohort to compare to. So just by sheer numbers alone, there are going to be more injuries. And but that's not going to be the case when you compare it to larger communities that have a lot more space and a lot more people. So I just think that's an important thing to point out.
Right. Yeah, a big difference would be like if you take it San Luis Obispo against Davis. I mean, you got a tremendous amount of bicycles that are on the road at Davis, but you don't have the same number of cars, commutes going from pillar to post, people trying to get to businesses or park their cars for shopping. It's very different.
Right. And I would say that, I mean, just, you know, my perspective and the way I teach is that it's that doesn't undermine the fact that we can all debate the statistics, doesn't undermine the need for to really prioritize multimodal or many different modes other than cars on the streets, and we're doing a great job of doing that. Doesn't prioritize the need to continue to make advances.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, good point. Thanks for clearing that, Billy.
Yeah, great show, and happy Bike Month, everybody.
Happy Bike Month.
Obviously a bicyclist. Mm-hmm. Yes. So question, from someone who is not a cyclist, who doesn't cycle a lot, I wouldn't consider myself a cyclist. Are there rules for cycling? Because I see some awful, or what I determine awful, behavior, both on this part of automobile drivers and also cyclists. And I'll give you some examples. When you see cyclists that are traveling two and three across, you know, and driving down a road, riding down a road, and they're outside the bicycle lanes, you know, is that for safety? Is that something that's taught? Riding on sidewalks, you know, is that, you know, going in the wrong direction? I mean, what are the rules?
These are all really good questions, and questions that we hear very common as we talk to community groups about safe bike riding. And I'll start right at the beginning. You said you're not
sure.
A cyclist.
I'm not.
But have you ridden a bike before?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So I'd wager right away that you are, in fact, a cyclist. You're part of that group, and that's an identity that I think starts to create some problems, because we think that there's one group of people who are cyclists and
I'm
one group.
I'm not an avid cyclist.
Yeah, and I understand that for sure. But we do like to point out that everybody has done this at some point, and we want to remind you about that experience and how fun and healthy it can be. Next thing, questions about group riding and things. There's a lot of recreational riding in the Central Coast, mm-hmm. a lot of riding on country roads, and we do see lots of circumstances where drivers are frustrated by bike riders blocking the road. And that's something, as each of us in the room who ride bikes but also drive cars, experience when we're driving. And I think we're all frustrated too when we're trying to drive down the road and there's a group of bike riders that are maybe blocking traffic and holding up traffic. And so while there is no law that forbids bicycle riders from passing one another or riding two next to each other, there are laws on the road that tell us about how we can hold up traffic or obstruct traffic. And so if a group of bike riders is holding up traffic, that's not being a respectful user of the road. That's not being a respectful member of our community. And the Bike Coalition and the city and Rideshare are all allies in helping and working hard to educate bike riders to be respectful users of the road, because most riders drive and they experience those same frustrations. Mm-hmm. And so we really want to help more riders understand how to share the road in a great way with drivers of vehicles. You mentioned bike riders leaving the bike lane. In mm-hmm. some cases, you'll see a bike rider leaving the bike lane on a road that you're driving along. And the California Vehicle Code wants bike riders to be in a bike lane, but there's a lot of exceptions to when the bike rider can leave. And that person is welcome to leave the bike lane in all sorts of circumstances where it's safer for them to have left the bike lane. A good example would be if they're making a left-hand turn, or if there's a spot where there's debris in the bike lane, or there's a slow-moving bike rider and they need to pass that person. Mm-hmm. All of those examples are exceptions that are explicit in the vehicle code. And I could tell you the vehicle code number right off the top of my head because I'm a bike education instructor. And those reasons are very important to recognize as the driver of a car. It is okay for a bike rider to leave the bike lane. The vehicle code recognizes it, and it's safer for them to do so in many cases because it'll put them in a more visible location on the road mm-hmm. and help them prevent common crashes where bikes and drivers collide. The last thing you mentioned was riding the wrong way. A lot of bike riders yeah. ride the wrong way or ride on the sidewalk. And the notion that we teach at every single bike education class, whether it's a group of little kids or a group of adults, is this. The number one most important thing to do on your bike when you're riding is to bike smart, to drive your bike. I say I drove my bike to work today because when I'm using my bike on the road, I operate it exactly like a car. If I'm making a right-hand turn, I use the right-hand turn lane and I put out my right turn signal. If I'm making a left-hand turn, I use the left-hand turn lane, I put out my left turn signal. If I'm going straight, I'm in the middle of the straight through lane. These are all things that we do naturally in our car, and the same rules, the same rights, and the same responsibilities apply to someone riding a bike. So would you drive your car the wrong way down a street? Absolutely not.
But are there rules about that? I mean, is it illegal for someone
absolutely.
To be?
Okay. Yeah, it is 100% illegal okay. to ride your bike against traffic. You're required to ride in the same okay. direction with traffic. And I think that's one of the problems is, like you said, almost all of us have ridden a bike when we were, some of us young kids, sure. and haven't ridden since then. And maybe we were taught things that weren't accurate.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is riding a bike is just like driving a car. The same laws apply. And in fact, when we do look at bike collisions, most collisions or crashes on bikes don't even involve cars. Those that do, about 18% of all bike crashes do involve a car. Of those crashes, about 50% are caused by the drivers of cars, and 50% are caused by the drivers of bikes. Mm-hmm. So bikes are at fault half the time, and auto drivers are at fault half the time. And the number one thing that bike drivers do, people riding bikes, they're going the wrong way. Mm-hmm. It causes a lot of collisions mm-hmm. because drivers of cars aren't looking for vehicles in the traffic lane coming the wrong direction. No. It's the last place you'd expect to see somebody moving quickly.
No, it's counterintuitive yeah. to everything that you're taught when you're driving.
Right. Yeah. So the idea is simple. Drive your bike.
What about riding on sidewalks?
Sidewalks are an interesting challenge. A sidewalk is not a safe place to ride a bike. The same reason for riding the wrong way applies to riding on the sidewalk.
Right.
Drivers of cars are not expecting to look for a fast-moving vehicle on the sidewalk. And so oftentimes cars that are turning across the sidewalk into a business or going down a street and they're making and going through an intersection don't expect a vehicle to be on the sidewalk.
Right.
And they're often caught by surprise for that reason and get into collisions as bikes are riding on sidewalks. So that's not a good idea. In the San Luis Obispo City area, it is explicitly written in the municipal code that it's illegal to ride a bike on the sidewalk.
Okay.
Not all cities have that law, but San Luis Obispo does. And so we definitely encourage people to drive their bikes, ride in the street with traffic, obeying all the same traffic laws that you would do when you're riding a bike. But we recognize, with families and with some folks that are really fearful of being rear-ended by a car or being in a collision with a car at all, that's why they're riding on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal is to educate them about why it's safer not to do that, and then to provide them with bike lanes and safe streets and bike paths so that they don't have to find themselves putting themselves in a dangerous position.
What about requirement for visible clothing or for lighting? Is that a requirement, a legal requirement for riding a bicycle? Because I do see a lot of people who are, or even helmets. I mean, are there required things that are necessary and legal? For instance, with a motorcycle, you need to have a helmet on.
Sure.
Because I do see that there are individuals that ride bikes without any lighting or any visibility, and it's dangerous. I mean, it's just dangerous.
You're so right. I mean, just like those of us in the room are concerned about seeing three bike riders abreast on a rural road or someone riding the wrong way on the street,
yeah.
I think we cringe when we see people riding at night without lights. There's nothing that scares me more as the director of the Bike Coalition than to run into somebody who didn't have any lights and they were riding around at night. The law says that you must have a front light on your bike if you're riding at night. You also must have reflectors on the side of your wheels, reflectors on your pedals, and a rear reflector as well. For adults, there is no helmet requirement for riding a bike, but there is a helmet requirement for anyone under the age of 18.
Okay.
And at the Bike Coalition, we definitely encourage everybody to wear a helmet. But we also understand that as we build more safety gear into what we expect we need to use when we ride a bike, we make it harder for people to choose a bike.
You prohibit, yeah.
And our goal at the Bike Coalition is really to remind people that your everyday clothes are cycling clothes. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have special padded shorts or a helmet or a fancy bike or anything. You can ride to and from work in your regular work attire on a bike and have a safe time if you drive your bike safely and legally. And that's really the goal, is we want to remind everyone, bike smart, drive safely, and that's really the priority. That's what's going to keep you safe. You can wear a helmet and bike like a goofball, and you can still get into a bad accident.
Yeah. Well, I have some more questions, but we have Cynthia. So, Cynthia, are you there?
Yep.
Hi. Did you have a question or comment?
Sure. Well, I consider myself a transportation cyclist, and I previously lived in a couple of really bike-friendly communities, Chico and Davis, and they're both really flat, so this helps quite a bit for people to get on their bike and feel like they haven't, you know, gone over, say, or around a volcano to get to work. So makes it a little easier. But my question really is, in trying to raise my children as cyclists in their own community, in their own neighborhood, my question is youth bicycling to school, and I wondered, are there efforts to see with the youth biking to Laguna Lake and to high school? What is working for them? You know, how have they been raised as bicyclists in this community? And then my second question, similar or related, is that if you and your child are riding from Laguna Lake to downtown, what is your safest way to navigate Madonna Road? I mean, I sometimes feel there is no safe way, so I'd love to hear from the panel what their comment is.
Okay. This could be stump the panel.
I
don't
know. I think everybody probably has a little bit to add there. Dan and Peggy can talk about the routing information. We do have a fairly robust Safe Routes to School program in the county, and Rideshare and the Bike Coalition work in partnership on that. Rideshare is the lead, and we go out into schools and we teach bike ed and safety programs to kids. So if you had a specific school in mind and you wanted to increase outreach at that school, then I would encourage you to contact us at Rideshare, and we can try to figure out how to get in front of that specific audience.
Absolutely. Stephanie points out that there's a huge set of resources available to families and to schools to teach kids about safe bike riding, and the city of San Luis Obispo contracts with the Bike Coalition to provide those rideshare contracts through the Safe Routes to School program, and the Office of Traffic Safety also funds that program. So the Bike Coalition is in lots of schools providing education to kids. We're happy to work with your kids to do a specific workshop for the middle school aged students, so that they can really learn some of the more sophisticated concepts that we don't always teach to elementary school kids. In addition, the City Police Department puts on a great bike rodeo every year, which is a skills course, an obstacle course for young kids to learn some of the drive your bike lessons that we were just talking about. And we really emphasize, again, the importance of education and teaching people how to ride safely, to drive their bike, and how that can be very empowering. So with regard to Laguna at Middle School and getting to downtown, that's a tricky route, and the city is definitely making improvements every given year on that route, with the effort of making it safe enough for you to feel comfortable riding downtown with your kids. We've got some parents at the Bike Coalition. A parent on our board of directors finds this to be one of the more challenging routes for him and his kids. And it depends on your ability and what you feel safe doing, but the bike lane improvements along Madonna Road are definitely sort of step one. If you feel comfortable riding there, that is a safe route across town. If you are coming off of Ocean Air and you turn left onto Madonna and just ride along Madonna in the bike lane, being very cautious around the intersections, that can be a safe way to get across town. The other option is to instead of going over the freeway, you could go left at Madonna Road and onto the Madonna property and use the little bike path there, and head across the Madonna property and to the edge of downtown at the Marsh Street ramps. And we know some people struggle with those ramp, the interaction of the bike path there and the on-ramp and off-ramp at the Marsh Street intersection there. But we are excited about. When you're on a bike, you can always become a pedestrian.
Exactly.
And you can always choose what makes you feel comfortable getting through the intersection. So that's kind of option two. And the last thing is that the city and the Bike Coalition and our decision makers, the leaders in our council, are devoted to solving this problem for you. And the city bicycle transportation plan outlines some facilities that we believe will continue to provide safe routes that are separated from traffic, where really everybody can feel safe. And we are not forgetting about Laguna Middle School in that effort. That's definitely one of the corridors we understand to be very important to create safe routes.
In fact, there's an upcoming meeting at the city, and it is posted on the city's website, which is www.slowcity.org, about updating the Laguna Lake Master Plan and the facilities, bike facilities and pedestrian facilities within that park space. Ultimately, the city has a bicycle transportation plan, and that plan shows a bike path going back behind the hotels on Madonna Road, so you don't have to ride out onto Madonna Road.
On the Madonna Road itself.
Right. So, but in the interim, if you have young children and you don't feel comfortable riding the bike lane, become a pedestrian, walk for that short period, and then get back on your
bike. That's not bad modeling to teach.
Not at
either.
All.
You know, of how to walk your bike and when to walk it.
Right. And likewise, as you mentioned, modeling, although adults don't have to wear helmets, wearing a helmet with your kids is, you know, showing good manners, I guess you call it.
Yeah. Cynthia, did that answer your question?
Yep. There's only one thing I would add. I think one of the reasons you feel so safe in those other communities is there's so many other people on bikes. So safety in numbers, let's get more people out there.
You are right. That's Grace. The best way for safety.
Thank you.
Thanks, Cynthia. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio, streaming live on the web at kcbx.org. If you're just tuning in today and won't be able to listen to the full show and want to, you have a great option from your computer. Go to kcbx.org and click the News Talk button at the top. You'll get a drop-down menu of local shows, and then click Central Coast Voices. You can listen live to this show right now, or you can listen to our prior shows at a time that's convenient for you. This works actually for all of our local programming. And today I'm talking with Dan Rivoir, Executive Director for Slow County Bike Coalition, Peggy Mandeville, Principal Transportation Planner with the City of Slow, and Stephanie Hicks, Program Manager with Slow Regional Rideshare and Public Information Officer for SlowCOG. And we're taking calls, so if you want to call us and have a comment or a question, you can call in at 781-3875, and we welcome your voice to the conversation. And we have a call here from Charles. So, Charles, are you there?
Hello?
Hi, did you have a question or comment?
Yes. You were talking about bike paths on Madonna Road, and recently I had to ride out to Lososa's Valley Road via Madonna Road, and there was a bike path going from downtown out to Lososa's Valley Road, but on the way back there wasn't. And I realized once I had already started down that road that that I was stuck because there's a barrier between the road and there's a frontage road on the right-hand side. So it seems like on the way back into town, the only safe way is to get on the frontage road until you get almost out to where the Delidio Farm is, and then that road ends up rejoining Madonna Road where there is a bike path. But along that long stretch from Los Osos Valley Road until you get almost up to where the post office is, there's no bike path.
That's true. That's a spot where the bike lane goes away. And in a circumstance like that, there's a couple of options for you that, again, depend on kind of how confident you feel riding your bike along that corridor. If it were Cynthia, our previous caller, and her kids, I would say take the frontage road. And myself, personally, I choose the frontage road as well. So as I'm headed towards town on Los Osos Valley Road or on Madonna Road, I just get off Madonna because there's no longer a bike lane and ride on the frontage road where there's almost no traffic, and I can cruise along in the neighborhood. if you wanted to, it's absolutely your right to continue riding down Madonna, and you can share that traffic lane with the autos that are driving in the same direction. Again, the California Vehicle Code gives you the right to the road, and you're absolutely welcome to ride there. But that's a good point, and it's a point that we take seriously at the Bike Coalition, and the city thinks about it as well. Whenever there are gaps in the network, it makes it more challenging to ride a bike. And the city's goal and the Bike Coalition's goal is to really close as many of those gaps as possible all throughout the county so that we can have a continuous bikeway network, a continuous transportation network for riding a bike or walking that helps everybody feel safe no matter what your age and no matter what your ability. So hopefully we can help you have a connected network in that area in the future.
I think in that particular instance that it'd be good if there was maybe a little sign or something like that directing cyclists onto the frontage road.
That's a great idea.
Because if you don't really realize that frontage road is there, then you have no other choice, and the cars are traveling kind of fast.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. And Peggy wrote that down.
It's on my to-do list. Thank you very much.
Okay. You know, I have one other question, and that is recently I was up by the Madonna Inn and riding on that road, and you come to Madonna Road, and there are two lanes of traffic, I think, that can turn left. I can't remember precisely, but I remember being really confused at that point as to where I was supposed to get. I didn't feel comfortable getting all the way in the left lane, because then you merge with traffic that's going to go off Madonna Road onto the freeway. The two left lanes kind of go onto the freeway, so it's kind of a confusing situation. And I almost felt like I needed to get off my bike and act like a pedestrian and go across the street and instead of riding. But
you're right, Charles. That's definitely an option. There is a crosswalk there. I think you're talking about the intersection of the Madonna Inn property and Madonna Road, and then there's those on-ramp and off-ramps there. Becoming a pedestrian, if you were, you know, riding up towards town on Madonna, you could hop off your bike and cross the street as a pedestrian. But you can also just imagine the intersection as though you were driving a car. And if you wanted to drive your car into the Madonna Inn property, what would you do? And if you felt confident doing that same thing on your bike, it's your right to do that, and you could. So you could take the leftmost left-hand turn lane and turn left onto that property if you so chose.
Well, this is not onto the property. That's when you're coming off the property, going onto Madonna Road.
Okay.
It's kind of tricky there because you're merging with, like, freeway traffic and all kinds of stuff.
A little tricky for us to kind of think of all the different intersections right now and describe a good route, but we do invite you to, you know, give us a call at the Bike Coalition. We're always chatting with people about routes across town, and we can just continue discussing this offline.
Can you tell me where the Bob Jones Trail starts, the new edition?
The Bob Jones Trail starts at Prado Road, but now it connects all the way up to Los Osos Valley Road. And we actually have a groundbreaking for that tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. And we can thank SLOCOG for over $600,000 in grant funding that helped us complete that construction.
And how long is that trail now?
It's over a mile long now, but eventually it's going to go all the way to Avalon, hook up with the Bob Jones Trail down there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Very exciting.
Yeah, it is. That'll be a nice ride.
Riding your bike to the beach,
yeah.
Wouldn't that
and
be great?
And a safe ride. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Rick. And Charles, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi.
Hi there, young lady.
You're so kind.
So this question actually is kind of for Dan.
All right.
If I may.
Absolutely.
Okay, Dan, I'm kind of like what I'm going to call a recovering prostate cancer person, okay? And I was told by my urologist not to ride a bicycle because the bicycle seat is... How would you say is irritating the prostate gland? Have you heard anything, or are any of the people that are listening, maybe have they contacted their urologist?
I don't know about any particular instances of someone talking to their urologist, but there are a lot of different options of bikes. And one of my best buddies who rides thousands of miles all the time doesn't like the comfort of bike seats either. And so the bike that he chooses to ride is a recumbent. It's a bike where you're actually kind of sitting down in a chair.
Yes.
And the chair itself is made out of mesh or something, and it's very comfortable, and hopefully it doesn't put any pressure where pressure isn't wanted. And so a recumbent bike would be a great option for you. And there are also recumbent trikes. So it has three wheels, which increases the stability. And there's a couple different shops around town that feature those bikes. I know Wally's Bicycle Works does carry those recumbent trike bikes.
Uh-huh.
And I really encourage you to go check one out because it's more comfortable than a Lazy Boy. And maybe you could find yourself riding a little bit more often with that.
Yeah, because those little seats are not too hot on those seats.
Absolutely.
But, and the other thing, going up to the Wasna Valley, I go up there quite often. And when I'm going up the hill, there's bicyclists coming down the hill, like cutting the corners and getting in my lane. I'm going to say my lane, not that it's owned by me, but I mean, if one of them crosses into my lane and gets crashed, I mean, is it not true that it is my fault?
Are they crossing the double yellow line in the middle?
That is correct. They are moving. When they come down that hill,
they're freewheeling down.
Yeah, that is very illegal, and we would highly discourage any bike rider from doing that. It's sad to hear that happening, and those are the types of things that the city and rideshare ask the Bike Coalition to address in our bike education workshops, and we're very proactive in trying to work with recreational riders to make sure that type of behavior doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It would not be your fault. It would be their fault. And we're sad to see people riding that way because, like I said earlier, you have to ride your bike just like you drive a car, and you would not want to be driving your car on the wrong side of a double yellow in a turn. That sounds like a great way to get into a collision.
Uh-huh. Well, I know that when I was a youngster, and that was a long time ago, I was told to ride against. Don't ride with the flow because you can't see who's behind you or what.
Right. We were told that years ago. Yes.
Oh, you must be my age.
I probably am.
A little doll, okay. No, I just wanted to clarify that because after I heard what you had said, I thought, well, wait a minute.
That's how we were learned, huh?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
There seems to be still a lot of misinformation about that, but what we're saying is correct.
Okay.
California Vehicle Code states that a bike rider must ride in the same direction with traffic.
Yes.
And so you have to do that on your bike. And I think as users of the road, we understand that law and order prevails, and that's what keeps things safe on the road. So definitely spread the word about that.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Charles.
Okay, thank you so much, and have a safe weekend.
All right, bye.
I strongly encourage people to take Dan's bike education classes. It'll make you a better bicyclist, and it'll also make you a better motorist.
You know, I have a question, too. You know, if there are these rules, are they enforced? You know, so I see this. If somebody's coming down freewheeling down a road, it's dangerous not only for the bicyclists, but also for the vehicles.
Absolutely.
You know, if people are riding the wrong direction, if people are riding and, you know, riding through stop signs and stop lights on their bicycles and they're illegal, what's the enforcement and who's doing it?
Well, the enforcement issue is a big one, and I'm glad you bring that up because, as I've said over and over today on the phone, the Bicycle Coalition, Rideshare, the Safe Routes to School program, and the city, we are all actively trying to get riders to obey the traffic laws. And we can capture people who are willing to come take one of our workshops. But folks who are out there trying to ride, you know, in traffic and doing things wrong aren't learning the lessons hard way. They're not learning the lessons like we do sometimes in our car. And so while many people would think that the Bike Coalition would not advocate for enforcement, that the opposite is true. We work with our police department to enforce these laws because we believe deeply that this is going to be an effective way to change behavior and get people riding safely. So enforcement with regard to the vehicle code for bikes is increasing. Particularly the City of San Luis Obispo Police Department has stepped up in a big way.
Are they starting to issue citations?
Yeah, they issue citations for people who have moving violations, running a stop sign or something. They issue fix-it tickets for folks who don't have lights and things.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, if you're riding at night, as we talked about earlier, you have to have a light. And they have even done some initiatives where they're reinforcing good behavior and rewarding people who are driving safely, both on their bike or in a car. And so I think the police department is keen on this idea, and we're encouraging them to go even further to just continue to reinforce the good behavior and strike out the bad behavior through the laws, just like we expect them to enforce speeding and moving violations for car drivers.
And what are the laws, if you will, for vehicles that are passing bicycles? Is there a distance requirement for passing around vehicles?
There is. The state legislature and the governor recently signed a bill into law this past year called the 3-foot passing law, or safe passing law, but it stipulates that 3 feet is the distance required for a safe pass.
So 3 feet from?
From the edge of the handlebars of the bike rider.
Okay.
So just like passing safely is a requirement for one car and another car, passing safely is a requirement from one bike and a car, or a bike and a bike. And while the driver's manual had for years said safe passing is defined by 3 feet, it wasn't written into law. And so we're happy to join about 30 other states in the union by clarifying that and really writing down in the letter of the law that 3 foot is what defines safe passing. And so we encourage drivers to do that. The real place where that becomes tricky is on a rural road where
Absolutely.
You have a double yellow in the middle. And I like to remind drivers to just think of the bike rider as a completely different vehicle. Imagine it's a tractor. You're out on a rural road, you're in the country, and a farmer is driving his tractor down the side of the road from one farm to the other farm. He's moving at 3 miles an hour in his tractor. You're behind him in the car. What do? You wait a minute till it's safe to pass, and then you pass the tractor because it's a slow-moving vehicle on the road. If you encounter a bike rider who's moving slow and it's difficult to pass, you just need to wait until it's safe, and then you can go ahead and pass them, even if it means crossing the double yellow for a short distance. So there is room in the vehicle code to allow you to do that, and we encourage people to not be so angry, you know, out there, and understand that these are folks who are, you know, making a decision that's good for their health. Depending on who they are and where they're coming from, it can be very good for our community too. So think of that rural bike rider as a tractor, just any other slow-moving vehicle, and go around them when it's safe to pass.
Okay. You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio with service from Salinas Valley to Ventura Coast. This American Life with Ira Glass follows our show at 2 p.m. today. We have about 14 minutes left in today's program and time for just a couple of more calls. If you have questions or comments, you can call 781-3875. And we have Brian. Brian, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I have a comment. First of all, I just want to say how thankful I am to live in a community where we have bike advocates and planners and city officials working so closely together to create a bike-friendly city. And I'm a avid cyclist and runner, and the comment I have is in regards to making our bike infrastructure more runner-friendly, because you know, cyclists aren't the only ones that use our bike paths.
Yeah, good point.
And one thing that I don't think a lot of cyclists realize is that runners don't actually like to run on pavement. They would prefer to run on dirt. Having about 3 feet of gravel or dirt on at least one side of the bike path would greatly enhance the runnability of our bike path. And if you notice, the bike path that goes along the railroad station is a perfect example. There's no obstructions on the side of the bike path, no fences or gates, and there's actually running trails that have been worn into the dirt beside the bike path by people just wanting to run there. And on a lot of the newer bike paths, like by Cal Poly and whatnot, fences have been put up pretty much right up next to that, and it impedes runners utilizing that space.
Okay.
And so if on new bike paths, there was maybe all it takes is about 3 feet on one side of the bike path, where maybe just laying down extra roadbed or just leaving it free from obstruction the running community would greatly appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your comments, Brian.
Yeah.
And do you want to address that, Peggy?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's great to hear that somebody's out jogging along our bike path.
Yeah.
And in the city, we actually do have a standard that requires 2-foot shoulders on our bike paths on each side. So the area that he's mentioning up near Cal Poly that's a little more restricted is because we have very limited space that we can put it in because we're close to the railroad tracks.
Okay.
And the railroad required us to put a fence there. But I am taking your comments to heart, and we'll be double-checking all plans and making sure that wherever we can to make sure we get the path or any obstructions farther away so that jogger can enjoy that 2 feet on either side.
Yeah, that's great. It's a good idea. And we have Skip. Skip, are you there?
Yep.
You have a question, comment?
Yep.
What is it?
Oh, sorry. I wanted to comment about bike facility design, and I'll get to back to the Class 1 or the trails in a moment, but I wanted to point out that on other than in city limits where there are bike lanes and out on some of the exterior roads, we have county roads that have a shoulder and a so-called fog line or white line, and that shoulder can vary from nothing to several feet, and they're not maintained. So cyclists ride to the left of that white line to stay on the pavement and to stay out of trouble. So I just want to make sure that the vehicle drivers understand that we're not just out there for the inconvenience of the motorists, but we're out there for our safety. Now, whether you're riding 3 and 4 abreast, that's illegal and should be dealt with. Another item is bike lanes, a Class 2 bike facility, if you will, like in downtown San Luis Obispo. There should be at least 5 feet wide and striped with a 4-inch white line. But in many cases where there are bike lanes, they're next to parked vehicles, and those vehicles, the doors open up. And so many cyclists ride as close to that white line in the bike lane as possible to stay out of what's called the door zone. Mm. Okay, now another item, and I think the gentleman before me touched on this. Class 1 facilities, bike paths, should be at least 12 foot of paved surface, 6-foot lanes, and more than 2 feet of decomposed granite shoulders. The minimum state standard is 2 feet, and Peggy indicated that would be the goal for the city. But the city should really, and the county, should have the same standard, the same 12-foot pavement, and 3 to 4 foot shoulders and decomposed granite. This helps with maintenance of the trail. It keeps the vehicles from running on the edges and breaking off the sides of the roads, and it keeps the weeds down, and it makes it easier to maintain the weeds so there's a clear running and biking path for all the users of the multipurpose trail. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Skip. And do you want to address that, Peggy, or anybody?
Those are just some great points. I think Skip did a great job echoing some of the things that we believe are important to the community.
Yeah, and those are things that are built into your planning when you're looking at developing new trails.
But where it all starts off is the in the city's case, the bicycle transportation plan and our engineering standards. So I encourage Skip and other community members that would like to see different designs for facilities in the future to work with their local government agency to establish those standards that would allow that construction.
Okay. By the local government, are you talking about the individual cities?
Right. Okay. Or the county.
Okay. Okay. And we have Mark. Mark, are you there?
Yes. I happen to live in Santa Margarita and like to ride my bike into San Luis sometimes to work.
My hat's off to you, Mark.
But other times it's a little far or the weather's bad and I want to put my bike on the bus, which I sometimes do. But occasionally the bike racks are full by the time they get to Santa Margarita because it's the last stop before San Luis. And on the return trip, I've had that happen to me also because I get back on the bus with my bike at the last stop, the top of Monterey Street, and once in a while the racks are full.
Okay.
I'm wondering what the options are there and if there's any move to increase the number of bike racks that a bus can carry somehow.
Okay, I'm going to let Stephanie address that. Thanks for that question.
Well, Dan and I are kind of conferring over here on the side. It's a good problem to have is the first thing I'll say. It's wonderful to see so many people using the bike racks. And we were very progressive in getting bike racks on our bikes in this region. Lots of areas don't actually even have bike racks, let alone bike racks on the front of the bus and on the back of the bus. And we are starting to see an increased number of people using those. Dan was just pointing out that you can actually bring your bike onto the bus.
Into the physical bus.
Yeah, I believe that RTA changed that policy, but I do invite you to call them to confirm that if you are asking to do that. Of course, it depends on how crowded the bus is. And then Rideshare has done an incredible job providing bike lockers, which is a locker that's available at many of the regional bus hubs, and you would be able to lock your bike inside that locker and really be confident that it wouldn't get tampered with while you make the commute by bus. Likewise, you could leave a bike in a locker on the city side if you chose to take the bus in and you wanted your bike to be waiting for you safely at the city transit center. So if you're interested in looking into those options, just contact Rideshare at rideshare.org and ask them about the bike lockers and about the Bike Month activities and about all the wonderful things that Rideshare is up to this May.
And also for other input, SLOCOG has unmet transit needs hearings that go on annually, that if you want to provide those comments in, that's how we figure out the priorities of where to put the facilities such as bike lockers.
And how would they find out about the SLOCOG meetings?
They go to slowcog.org and you can find out about all of our meetings. And that kind of is a good point, Peggy, because I think what's important here is that people are calling in with all these great comments about facilities and improvements and standards. And what everyone needs to understand is that most of the planning is a very open and transparent public process. And so we always encourage people to keep an eye at slowcog.org for what we are, you know, in the process of planning, because coming to these early planning meetings is very important to have your voice heard. For instance, we just wrapped up the Chorro Valley Trail. We're getting ready to start some study of the Anza Trail, which connects Pismo to San Luis Obispo. And coming and voicing concerns about runners on these trails and width of trail and having these conversations with the team that's putting together the early planning of these trails, it's really important to get everyone's input. So if you go to slowcog.org, it always has a calendar of events and a listing of all of our public workshops and plans under study.
Okay, and we've just got about a minute to go. So the coalition phone number?
Yeah, if anyone wants to reach the Bike Coalition to become a member or to feed ideas to us, our phone number is 805-547-2055. Our website is slowbikelane.org. And with Bike Month around the corner, we really want you to go to rideshare.org and check out all of the events that are coming up this May, including a couple of events starting tonight to launch Bike Month. And Stephanie's going to highlight some more of that before we get off.
Quick.
Okay, for Rideshare, just dial 511.
1 minute.
511, and you'll be directed to Rideshare, and we can give you all kinds of transportation planning information. Bike Month is kicking off tonight at Lincoln Street Deli on Broad and Lincoln in San Luis Obispo, and we encourage everybody to come. But I think the most important thing is that you don't have to be a commuter to ride your bike. You just need to get on your bike, and it's fun to get on your bike, and anyone with a bike can participate in Bike Month.
Thank you for joining us on Central Coast Voices. Next week, you can join Fred Monroe as he talks with John Spadafore, Grace McIntosh, and Jerry Rowe about the building of the new homeless center here in San Luis Obispo County. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for listening.